You are listening to the Friends of Fantasy Benefits Baseball Podcast. We will be coming to you each and every day with uncensored, in-depth analysis of everything you need to know to win your fantasy leagues this season. You can follow us on Twitter at Fantasy Benefits or join the Facebook discussion groups www.facebook.com/groups/Friends of Fantasy Benefits. Give us a 5-star review on iTunes and send us a copy or screenshot of it to friendsoffantasybenefits@gmail.com or on Twitter at Fantasy Benefits for a chance to get into one of our listener leagues or other prizes. Enjoy the show. We are Friends with Fantasy Benefits.
Mike, how hard are you right now?
Oh, man, I've been hard since you said, hi, welcome to Friends with Fantasy Benefits podcast.
We are the number one explicit podcast, though, so ass.
It's kind of like an epiphany, like, oh, my goodness, the Earth is actually flat.
We are Friends with Fantasy Benefits.
If we were doing, like, a fantasy, you know, hotness league, though, the guy is a first-round pick. The guy is, like, grade A looks. His hair is top-notch. The face.
We are Friends with Fantasy Benefits.
The jawline, all that is just really, it's kind of riveting, to be honest. The only person I might put him from, or people I would put him from, maybe, is like Bryce Harper, Eric Hosmer, Matt Kemp in the eyes definitely have to be up there.
We are Friends with Fantasy Benefits.
Welcome to the Friends of Fantasy Benefits Baseball Podcast. I'm Justin Mason, lead fantasy writer and analyst for friendsoffantasybenefits.com. Joining me on this episode are Mike and Matt. Mike, how you doing?
I gotta say, I'm pretty happy today because for years now, I've been talking about how the Earth is flat. And I'm just so happy that Kyrie Irving finally has just told the world how flat the Earth really is. I'm glad that everybody kind of has this enlightening moment. It's kind of like an epiphany, like, oh my goodness, the Earth is actually flat. So I'm really happy about this.
I cannot believe someone in the like Cleveland Cavaliers PR department hasn't pulled him aside and been like, listen, dude, you're an idiot. Stop looking that way. If you want to believe that, that's fine. Don't like, just keep it to yourself.
It's that Duke education, man.
Yeah, I was about to say that. It's pretty bad. In all seriousness, though, like Tyler Glass now, he's learning a new pitch. Corey Dickerson is like in the best shape of his life. He's dropped like 20 pounds. He's shredded. Spring training has like a full slate coming on Saturday. So like baseball is ramping up. I couldn't be any happier. It's like a really exciting time.
Miguel Sano dropped 15, 20 pounds.
Oh, Sano is just...
Matt Adams lost about 60 pounds.
Yeah,
nobody cares about Matt Adams.
Matt Adams looks crazy. As you can hear, Matt Thompson just jumping right in to talk about Matt Adams. Okay. Matt, how are you?
Matt Adams stinks. Don't invest in him. I'm good. Been a little hectic around town here, but everything's going good. Watching good. The Sandlot on MLB Network because they refuse to show Winter League games, but that's a different rant for a different day.
Yeah, I think we've had that rant before already. Joining us today is Vlad Sedler of RotoWire and actually a bunch of different places. Vlad, how are you?
Guys, thank you for having me. I'm doing fantastic. Ready to talk some baseball with you guys.
Awesome. Vlad, for those who don't know who you are, tell people where you can be kind of followed on Twitter, social media, and then all the places you kind of write and where people can read your stuff.
Sure, yeah. So I am found on Twitter at RotoGut, G-U-T, R-O-T-O-G-U-T. And I've been writing for RotoWire for a few years and also done some work for the Baseball Forecaster, Baseball HQ, and then I write some DFS stuff for Fantasy Guru Elite. And just been a longtime NFBC player, just playing many years over in those drafts in Vegas and online, and just pumped up and ready for the baseball season.
Awesome, awesome. We're really happy to have you on the show. This is going to be a lot of fun. We're talking like the best position in all of fantasy baseball, and that, of course, is shortstop. So, but before we jump into that, I want to let everybody know, I should have been kind of talking about this, you know, earlier in kind of the campaign, but we're doing a t-shirt campaign on teespring.com. So if you go to teespring.com, you type in FWFB into the search, you will find a t-shirt campaign. We've got t-shirts and sweatshirts, all different colors, stickers, things like that. We get a small cut of that that helps us kind of keep the podcast and the website going and up. So if you are interested in sporting some Friends of Fantasy Benefits apparel, please go to teespring.com, type in FWFB into the search, and get something from our store. I think I just bought like $300 worth of stuff, and I think I might actually go and buy some more and then give them away to people who give out some five-star reviews. So definitely go check that out at teespring.com. So let's jump into this position. We're going to talk about shortstop, and we're going to lead off with Jonathan Villar. And no one was higher in the industry last year on Villar than Mike Warner. So, Mike, why do you hate him this year?
I will never hate Jonathan Villar. Let me be absolutely clear about that, because what he did last year, I will forever remember. He won me multiple leagues due to his play, so I couldn't be happier with him. I do think he's going a bit high right now, though. Last season he ended up as the fifth best overall player in fantasy, and he was the top shortstop by quite a fair margin. He ended up going 12th in this last labor mixed draft, which is just too high for me. I think he's going to end up, you know, going down in batting average, absolutely, because, you know, last year, especially in the second half, he had a 72% contact rate. That's usually consistent with somebody that hits more in the 260, 270 range. 50% ground ball rate should yield to more of a, you know, 9 to 12 home run pace, as opposed to almost 20, which he hit last year. Doubled his home run to fly ball rate. He had 8 home runs in September. I think the power is going to go down. The stolen bases, while Milwaukee was tops in baseball and stolen base attempts last year, they were 17th in 2015. So I can see that trending down a bit as well. I just think everything's going to kind of dip a bit for him. And while I still love him, I still think that he is a quality fantasy asset. I just don't think he is a top 2-round pick, which is where he's currently going.
Vlad, what are your thoughts on VR this season? Are you down for him in the top 2 rounds?
It's a tough spot. At the FSTA draft, Charlie Wiegert and I grabbed him in the third round just because he ended up falling. But, I mean, the guy was arguably the fantasy MVP based on where he was going last year. And I think it's pretty natural for people to assume, you know, regression with stats like those that come out relatively out of nowhere. So I'm not really expecting a full repeat, especially in power. But I would say probably even with like a 20% reduction across the board in all of his stats, he could potentially earn like a late round, second round, early third round pick. I think he's probably going a little too high. It's hard to take him over a guy like, say, Francisco Lindor. But he made better contact last year against lefties. Home run rate was nearly the same as before. Had that 25% K rate last year, which is really not that far above his career rate. And the key there really is the walks. I mean, the guy, had a low double-digit walk rate. So I think if he can stay up there, 50 stolen bases could be in the cards again. Just something I happened to look up today is, last year he had 80 stolen base attempts, and he's actually only the second guy. Him and Dee Gordon are the only guys since 2009 when Ellsbury had 80-plus attempts. So it's hard to imagine him getting all those attempts again, but I think maybe 40, 50 stolen bases could work for him.
Matt, what are your thoughts on Jonathan Villar this season?
Oh, I like him still, man. I think I got to give props to Mike on that. He kept riding that train last year, and it paid off big time. I think he's got a VR tattoo somewhere on his body by this point.
It's on my ass.
Yeah, I was going to say that, but I didn't want to get 2PG or 2R for the podcast.
Definitely don't get the number one explicit on this podcast. Yeah,
we are the number one explicit podcast, though. So ass. What I will say about VR is I think it's hard to project someone for 62 steals again. Yeah, I think he is still going to run. He was a solid player with the average and the runs and the surprising home runs, 19 home runs. I don't know if I buy that again. Especially, hit 56% ground ball rate. I think Mike hinted at all that. 373 BABIP, but he's a speed guy, so I think the higher BABIPs are going to be typical for guys like that. 25% strikeout rate, okay. He's shown, despite the strikeouts, that he can do this. He's going to be moved around in the infield a little bit this year. I think he's playing second base regularly this year for the Brewers. So it's good to know in keeper formats he might not play shortstop anymore. But a guy like this, it doesn't matter where he's going to play because you're always going to find a spot. The scarcity of speed kind of props his value up. But as we look down, maybe speed's not so scarce if you know where to find it at, you know?
Yeah, I agree with you in that regard. For me, it's what Vlad said. Even if you take a reduction in kind of his statistics, I still think he has a pretty good shot to return second or third round value. So, I mean, though, I think the floor is pretty high. Yeah, I don't think he's hitting 19 home runs again. I would project probably somewhere between 12 and 15 and feel happy with yep. that. But I think he can easily project 40, 45 to 50 steals and feel pretty comfortable he's going to get there. The Brewers led Major League Baseball by a lot in stolen bases, by about 40, 45 stolen bases over the Reds last year. So, I mean, they're a team that's going to run quite a bit. VR is going to be a huge part of that. So, I mean, I understand what Mike is saying in terms of he's going too high, and I do think he's going too high. I wouldn't take him over Seager or Bogarts. And I think, you know, there's an argument to be had depending on how high you are on Lindor and Story. But for the most part, I don't think it's egregious where he's going, especially considering kind of the temperature of fantasy in terms of where people are trying to grab speed. I don't know if I'll have any shares just because I think he's just going to go a tad bit too high for me. But like if he falls to the third round like he did for Vlad at the FSTA draft, I'm all aboard that kind of value. All right, let's go ahead and move over to Francisco Lindor. Vlad, what are your thoughts on Lindor? Is he a top three or four shortstop for you?
He's, you know, he's right there on the borderline of top five. I think I like him more than Bogarts this year, only because I think that there's going to be a little bit of a hangover effect from the loss of Poppy, David Ortiz. And I just think Lindor's a damn good hitter. He's one of those guys that I think is going to be a perennial all-star. He's very mature for his age. He's becoming a leader on that team. And, you know, made a really nice leap from his rookie year in terms of his walk rate. From 6 to 8%, reduces his strikeout rate from 16 to 13%. I think we could see those type of numbers again. And I think having a guy like Encarnacion behind him, you know, even though NC's getting up there in age, I think it's gold to be among the run leaders this year. I think we could see, you know, 100 plus runs, probably overachieving a little bit in the power. 15 home runs last year was nice, but I wouldn't necessarily, you know, expect a bump to 20 or anything like that. But I think that's fine because we're more so paying for the runs and the batting average and some stolen bases. And, you know, as you guys know, predicting batting average is just a really fickle game. But I think he could be one of those perennial, you know, anywhere from 290 to 310 type of hitters every year. So I think he's a really solid, nice floor pick.
Matt, what are your thoughts on Lindor for this season?
It's crazy how much, I mean, for me, I can't speak for you guys, how much a difference a year makes at this time. Lindor, for me, was a guy, I didn't think, I'll be quite honest, I didn't think he was ever going to hit enough. And look at this. So you look at this guy now, I mean, last year we were talking up the 356 BABIP and thought he might have been aided by the BABIP a little bit. The BABIP dropped all the way down to 333 this year, and he's proved to be better than just a BABIP guy. The stolen bases are nice. He's very successful in his career, 31 for 38 on the bases. So hopefully he gets a little bit more aggressive out there. I like him in the lineup he's in. We talked about when they got Encarnacion how deep that lineup is, and that cannot help him getting a big bat like that. I think the floor is so high that he justifies being a top five shortstop. He's right on the cusp for me, just like Vlad. I think I have him in the 5-6 range. I have VR kind of right, real similar Bogarts, and they're all on the same tier there. Yeah, there's nothing not to like about Lindor. The high contact percentage. I wish he would walk a little bit more, but he negates that by the elite strikeout rate. So I'm all in on Lindor as I can, and he's kind of right amongst the last couple guys of that elite tier shortstops that I want to get a hold of this year.
Mike, what are your thoughts on Francisco Lindor? Do you agree with these guys?
My problem with Lindor is draft cost, and I just don't think I will ever be able to draft him based on where he's going. I mean, he's the 30th overall pick right now, and to me, if I'm drafting a guy 30th overall, I need power, I need a lot of stolen bases, and I need a lot of runs scored. He does offer a good amount of batting average and a really good run floor because, I mean, last year he ended up having 99 runs scored, and they added E5 this year. So that's obviously going to definitely, you know, hook him up in terms of getting more runs scored this season. But I just can't get over it. Last year, this time, he was going 90th overall. That's where he went and tout mixed. He ended up having a great season. He finished sixth among shortstops on the ESPN Player Rater, and that equates to him being the 30th overall pick. But I don't think that the Steelers are going to go that much higher. I think that it's going to sit in the 15 to 25 range, which you're paying for in the top 30 picks. Cleveland was top 7 in stolen base attempts in per game in 2016. That even if that improves a little bit, I don't see it. You know, I don't see him surpassing 25 steals. And, you know, while his plate skills are amazing, he was second among all shortstops last year in strikeout to walk percentage. I just think that paying for a batting average guy that's going to score runs at pick 30 is not what I want to do. I usually want to get a top tier pitcher there, or a top tier outfielder, top tier first baseman. There's just other ways I like to go with the top 30 pick. So
I don't think this is going to affect him, but do you guys think the presence of Encarnacion in the lineup kind of slows the running game down for him a little bit, batting behind him?
I was going to say that might have an effect. I've never been a Lindor fan. One, because I agreed with Matt when he was coming up that I just didn't think he'd hit enough. I certainly have never really bought into the double-digit power, and you know the fact he hit 15, I think, probably proves me wrong there. But he just doesn't fit into my draft strategy to begin with. I'm not a guy who really puts a premium on average, because of what Vlad mentioned earlier in the podcast, is batting average can be fluky to begin with. So I tend to punt that category in Roto for the most part, or at least devalue it. So Lindor is a guy that I can't get past the draft cost like Mike. The top 30 pick for me, I would rather have Trevor Story. I think I would put Lindor in his own little tier below kind of the elite, you know, top 5 shortstop. So I'm out on Francisco Lindor, but that's no different from, you know, every year that we've been discussing him.
I do want to add this, since, you know, Vlad's a DFS guy, so he can understand this. Progressive Field has gotten knocked in the past for being more of a pitcher's park. And actually, you know, over the last 3 years, according to Baseball HQ's park metrics, lefty and righty power is up, and runs scored is up as well. Cleveland as a team was top 3 in OPS and WRC plus at home last season. They've added E5. And also on top of that, Francisco Lindor hit .344 last year at home. So like for DFS purposes, just looking past, you know, wanting to draft him in season long, if you don't want to draft him in season long, maybe play him in DFS sometimes when he is playing at home in a park that has been a little bit more favorable for hitters over the last few years.
And just to add, I think it's also important to be able to play that one Lonnie Chisenhall 7 RBI game per season.
Yeah, oh my God, I hate that guy. I hate that. I lost the tournament last year specifically because of Lonnie Chisenhall, and I was so upset. I'm still upset. I can't believe you brought that up.
Oh yeah, 2 years ago, he did one. 2 years ago, he did that. I parlayed him literally the next day in a dynasty league. I traded him straight up for David Dahl 2 years ago.
Oh, wow.
So that worked out pretty well. But then I traded Dahl for Steven Matz, so then I screwed it up. But it's okay. I had a little window of contention, and I needed a starting pitcher, and I pulled the trigger on that, and I regret it. It was a bad move.
You should. Let's go ahead and move on. Let's talk about now I'm going to butcher his name. I got it right prior to the podcast. Oledmys Diaz. Of the St. Louis Cardinals. Matt, when we talk about overrated Cardinals guys, we throw it to you first.
Well, I don't know if overrated is the word I'd use to describe Diaz. I do think I think the projection systems are a little bit rough on him this year. The thing that sticks out with him is I love the contact skills. He simply just does not strike out, and there's value in that. And I really like the defensive improvements he made, which is going to help keep him on the field. The Cardinals don't really have another viable option at shortstop. Peralta can't play the position. Greg Garcia is not a Major League Baseball player. So you look at all that. I think Diaz, where he's going on the board, he's the ninth shortstop per NFBC, going at one pick 150 overall. I think that feels fine to me, but I won't own him in any leagues based on that, because I'd rather wait 14 picks, another full round, and grab someone like Tim Anderson. The shortstop's really weird. You look on the NFBC, the 1 through 6 guys are picked 16 through 31. The gap between shortstop number 6, which is Trevor Story, and number 7, which is Eduardo Nunez, is 80 picks. It's crazy to me. The tiers make themselves in the NFBC list. But I think Diaz being toward the top of the second tier, with I put him up there with Russell. I think a lot of guys like Russell more this year. I actually don't. I think Diaz is safer with the batting average, and I think Diaz is going to hit 20 home runs if he stays healthy. but there's too low around him. Elvis Andrus. I like Tim Anderson a lot better. Going later, Peraza is going later. I wouldn't mind him. Marcus Simeon, who you can get in OBP formats, is roughly the very, very similar player for 70 picks later. So I can get on board with that too. So Diaz is while he's a really nice player and he's going to get all the playing time he can, he won't be on my team just because of where he's going. There's always somebody I like better at pick 150.
Vlad, what are your thoughts on Diaz this year?
I think he is someone that could fit for a potential plan. Like, say, you've got a lot of questionable batting average guys early on, and you don't necessarily want to wait on shortstop. The thing with Diaz is, so far in the NFBCs that I've been doing and a couple of slow drafts, he doesn't seem to be really popular. So even though he's got that 150 ADP, the few that I have done, although it's a short sample size, he's slipping. So I did get him in one league where basically he ended up falling two full rounds, and I had no problem taking him there. But right now I think his ADP is somewhere around 150, and it does kind of feel like paying full price. But you know, we know he struggled a little bit, came back down to earth after hitting what was it, like 315 before the All-Star break, hit like almost 260 after. But you know, like Matt was saying, good plate discipline. You know, I think he's going to hit for a decent average, and he scored a lot of runs. I mean, for 111 games, scored 71 runs, flashed some pop. So I think he can hit the 20 homers, actually hit 20 homers this year. So, you know, there's a potential that he could disappoint, but I think he's pretty locked in at that position. Feels like a really nice fit for the Cardinals. And I think he's pretty safe for where he goes. He's just not somebody that people are going to reach for. He's one of those boring, you know, Kyle Seager type picks, but I think he's a pretty solid one.
He would have easily cleared the 20 homer mark last year if he didn't get hit by a pitch and broke his thumb or wrist or something in there, thumb and wrist injury, and he missed a lot of time, came back too early because the Cardinals were trying to make the playoffs, and he was their best shortstop option by far and kind of struggled down the stretch. If he's healthy, I have no concern. I think he easily clears 20 home runs.
Yeah, I just don't buy that. One, I just don't know if he is a guy that we can guarantee get 600 plate appearances. Health or not, they just have too many moving parts on that infield. I think there are going to be too many times where he gets sat down, especially if he goes through a cold string. I just think the power kind of came out of nowhere, and I don't buy the 300 average. So for me, I'm much more willing to just kind of pass him up where he's going and take guys that are going later than him. You know, Matt mentioned Marcus Simeon. I still like Brandon Crawford. You know, both those guys are, you know, going anywhere from, you know, 50 to 100 picks later. I just think there's too much value later on for a guy that doesn't have a track record, really just popped up out of the blue. And I don't know how secure his spot is in that lineup. Mike, what are your thoughts on Diaz?
Let's see. Let's split this up into pros and cons. The pros, his fly ball percentage was ninth among all shortstops last year, and his OPS and home runs were both in the top 15. That's great. I also really like his plate skills. Like Matt mentioned, the 85% contact rate and 9% walk rate it gives him a 260 batting average floor. I think 300 is certainly something he could do again, but I think his floor is sitting in the 260, 270 range. That's great. The cons. The Cardinals don't steal bases. They're 28th and 22nd in stolen base attempts per game over the last 2 years. I know Matt said they want to get more athletic and steal bases. I'll believe it when I see it. So while Diaz does have some speed, I don't think that equates to double-digit stolen bases quite yet. He also had that fractured thumb, which should kind of mitigate his power. On top of that, while his ADP is at 150 and it's fluctuating, he went 120 in labor mixed. So I don't know for sure if people are that down on him or not. I mean, some of the mocks that I've done, he's been going around that spot. So I don't have a good temperature on where he's going in drafts. But for right now, I'm going to assume he's going in between 120 and 160, and I'm not comfortable with any of those spots. And then on top of all of that, they have other options. As much as Matt doesn't think Gray Garcia's a major league player, he played almost 30 games at shortstop last year. Also, Jed Jorko can also play shortstop.
Mm-hmm. No, he can't.
Well, he did last year, almost 30 games.
He may not be able to play it well defensively, but both Peralta and Jorko can play shortstop technically.
By that logic, anyone can play shortstop.
But here's the thing, though. How comfortable – go ahead.
I was going to say, the Cardinals have shown the willingness in the past to throw them out there. So just because you don't like Mike Matheny's managing doesn't mean he's not going to manage the way he manages.
had to bring that name up, didn't you?
Well, yeah, but I mean, if Diaz struggles at the plate, I bet you he's willing to, you know, sacrifice some defense for one of these guys who can hit.
In my opinion, not even worrying about the defensive side of things with whichever guy plays the position or whatever. The biggest problem for me is the fact that Diaz had that thumb issue, and time again, when players get a wrist injury, a thumb injury, the most recent one that comes to mind is Freddie Freeman. It takes a while for the power to come back, and I'm not willing to wait a whole first half of the season for Diaz to get fully healthy and to be able to pop, you know, 15 plus home runs again. So I just think that there's a lot of other options to go with at the shortstop position that are going after him or before him. I would rather pay for Addison Russell 20 picks earlier for his possible breakout. I would rather pay for Elvis Andrews, who's going a little bit after him, because he is safe. You know, even Troy Tulowitzki, there's a lot of options. So in a nutshell, I think that there is plenty of options to go with around Diaz, and there's plenty of risk that's associated with Diaz as well.
All right, we're going to take a quick break. We'll be back right after this. Coming soon from the minds that gave you the Friends of Fantasy Benefits Fantasy Sports Podcasts is a new venture, Survivor, Friends with Fantasy Benefits style. Let's go ahead and jump into the next guy, and that is Brad Miller. And when we talk about guys who are on the Tampa Bay Rays and are overrated, we always throw it to Mike. Mike, what are your thoughts on Brad Miller this year?
Just don't draft him. I'll keep it simple. Don't draft him. The power was not a fluke, but there's no way he's not a 30 home run guy. The hard contact doesn't support that. His plate skills have never been great. He had a whole first month of the season where he hit 185. And he just, I don't think that over the course of a whole season, he's going to be consistent for you in head-to-head leagues. And then in roto leagues, if you're not, you're paying essentially where for the power that I don't think he's going to exhibit once again. The stolen bases, I think, are a thing of the past for him. He had 13 in 2015, and the Rays, to me, are not a team that likes to steal bases anymore. And I think you're just going to be looking at more of a guy that hits between 17, 15 home runs and has, you know, 5 stolen bases with a 250 or less batting average. And that, to me, is not somebody that I'm willing to take in the top 150 or 160.
Vlad, what are your thoughts on Brad Miller this year?
I'm with Mike. I'm not too big on Miller. Just probably pretty much somebody that I'm just going to keep passing on in drafts. You know, he's a late bloomer. I mean, he's 27 years old. We were waiting for this breakout for a while with the Mariners. And last year, I mean, those, you know, 30 plus, you know, 30 bombs, that, you know, 20.4 home run to fly ball ratio is unsustainable. He did hit the ball hard at 35% hard hit rate. But I'm just not expecting in that park, especially with half of his games there, to hit 30 again. The BABIP was definitely a little off, a little low at 277. So had some bad luck in the batting average department. And the ISO with 239 was almost double his career high. You know, I'm expecting the drop in home runs, batting average, you know, somewhere in the same range, maybe, you know, 10 to 20 points higher, but nothing exciting. And he does get first base and shortstop eligibility, at least on NFBC. But again, you're probably not going to use, you know, him at first base or even corner infield. So for me, at an ADP of 162, it's pretty much a pass.
Matt, what are your thoughts on Brad Miller this year?
A lot of what these guys already said, man. He's going 162 overall. I already told you how much I like Tim Anderson, 164. Michael Semien going 40 picks later, 206. I'm all on that instead of Miller. I don't trust Miller. I think there's safer options around. I listed Semien, and Anderson has a higher floor because of stolen bases, and Miller does not do that. So, yeah, I'm going to have to pass. I mean, I'll put my eggs in a different basket, somebody that's more established. And Miller, he had a very nice season. If he hits 30 home runs next year, I'll name my firstborn kid Justin. So
I'm going to put that in the front of the episode so we can make sure it's easy to find later on. Not that I'm projecting him to hit 20 home run or 30 home runs again. But I mean, if I could get Brad Miller towards the kind of back half of his ADP, towards his max pick of, 201, I think I'd be willing to take a shot on him. I do prefer Marcus Semien going, you know, closer to that 200 mark as well. So, I mean, I probably won't end up with Miller in really many drafts or any drafts. But here's the thing I do like is he already has first base and shortstop eligibility. And you have to think with Logan Forsythe out of town that he's going to pick up second base. And I just am a sucker for the multi-positional eligibility, especially in a league like NFBC where you don't have necessarily a ton of roster flexibility if you're in a draft and hold because you can't pick up anybody. So he's one of those guys that kind of fill different spots. I just think where he's currently going, he's overrated. And I do agree with you guys. I don't think there's any way he approaches 30 home runs again. I would definitely pencil in 20 and be happy with anything I got on top of that. All right, let's move on to Dansby Swanson.
Who's been waiting for this, Justin. Yeah. This is you.
Well, I'm going to throw it to Vlad first, but this is definitely going to be a hot topic conversation because Dansby Swanson is getting quite a bit of pub considering he is a top prospect and going to have a role full-time in Atlanta. Vlad, what are your thoughts on Swanson this year?
I mean, he's one of the guys that I've got a lot of my projections in, and this is one of those guys that I just keep hemming and hawing on where I think things will end up with, but, you know, obviously huge big time pedigree, you know, former first round, first overall pick, I mean, a solid debut hitting .302 last year with a .361 OBP in 38 games, a lot of it fueled by a .383 BABIP. But he's in a nice spot there between Inciarte and Freddie Freeman, which I think is going to be a really good spot for runs and RBI opportunities. But again, I think he's just hard to project. I think like many rookies do, no matter how high of a pedigree, he's going to have his ups and downs this year. And I'm also not sure that he spent enough time in the minors. I think he was promoted possibly a little quickly. But I don't know if he stays with the big club, maybe something like 10 to 15 home runs, 15 to 20 stolen bases, and maybe runs will be his biggest benefit.
Mike, what are your thoughts on Swanson for this year?
I'm out for this year. This is going to be kind of a wait and see for me on Dansby, because as much as I love him, and I truly do love him, I appreciate the player that he is. I think he's going to be a fine source of speed and power once he matures a bit more. And I think the plate skills are borderline elite for somebody this young, but the ascent to the major leagues was a bit quick last year. And there is a possibility that he could get, you know, brought back down to the minor leagues if he starts to struggle at the beginning of the season. And last year in September, people are really kind of, you know, looking at this. He had 3 home runs and 2 stolen bases with a .313 batting average. That also came with, you know, a 71% contact rate, which is, you know, close to 30% in the strikeout department. I don't think that he would stick with a, you know, .300 batting average if things were going that way. So for this year, I have him more as a .250 to .260 hitter, borderline 10 and 10 in terms of the home run and stolen bases, maybe a little bit higher if he got a full season in the majors. But again, this is more of a wait and see for me. His max draft pick in NFBC has been out of the top 200, which I'm okay with. It was 248, but his min pick is at 132. So I just have a feeling that there's going to be people in all of the leagues that I play in that are going to want to draft him a little bit higher than I'm willing to. Right now I have him as my 26th shortstop off the board. And I think that that's fair when you're looking at a guy that's 23, barely has any time in the majors. While he is talented, I think it's going to take some time. And I'm just willing to wait a year and see.
Matt, you're super high on him. He made your top 5 players in terms of rookie or prospect eligible players. What are your thoughts on him for this year?
For this year, I mean, my expectations are a little bit tepid, but I still have him. He's going to get all the at-bats he can handle as long as he stays healthy. I don't think there's any reason he's going to go down. The defense is going to be there. He's going to be an asset to help the Braves from the jump from that spot. They open up a new park. He's the face of the franchise, him and Freddie Freeman. They rushed him up last year to be ready for this. I think what Mike said for a peak year, I think, is for the handful, or what Vlad said, excuse me, like 12 to 15 homers, 12 to 15 steals, you know, 260, 270 average. I think that's what you're looking at this year. I think runs will be there. RBIs won't be with being where he's at in the order. This year he's not going to be all that exciting an option, but he's a better long-term play obviously than he is this year, because I mean, he's going to be the Braves shortstop for every bit of the next 10 seasons, and he's going to put up consistently strong numbers across the board. He'll become a batting average asset with time.
It's probably not going to happen this year, but I mean, I still have him comfortably in my top 20 shortstops, I think, just because of the playing times are going to be there. He's not a guy I'm looking to grab in my leagues, but I mean, I don't hate him like you do, Justin, so it's a little bit different, but I mean,
think the industry as a whole is overrating him because
they are. No, they are. Yeah. You're fair on that.
Because, I mean, he was the first overall pick. He was traded in a highly publicized and highly criticized deal where the Braves were you know, touted as the kind of trade rapist of, you know, of Major League Baseball when they, you know, gave up Shelby Miller and able to pull in Dansby Swanson. I think people are forgetting that he is he's going to be a much better real life player than fantasy player. He doesn't have an elite, you know, kind of skill set that is going to show through this year at the position. And shortstop is so much deeper than it was. And Matt takes issue with the fact that if you look at my ranks on FanGraphs, I ranked him as my 37th shortstop for this season. And while I think I could or should probably move him up a little bit, I just can't buy into the hype. And I think people are reading prospect lists for real baseball, not fantasy, and they're going, this guy is going to be a star, and he is not. You know, I personally, I'm down on him for the length of his entire career, much less for just this season where he skipped AAA. He never took a AAA at bat. He didn't have a ton of at-bats in AA. I know he was, you know, an advanced college hitter, so that meant he would probably move through their system quickly, but he moved through a little bit too quickly for my taste. If you look at Steamers project him, they project him to go 13 home runs, 9 stolen bases with a .259 average, would put him around, you know, the top 20, barely in the top 20, maybe like 19th or 20th in terms of overall shortstop. I have no problem. You know, we don't know how the stadium is going to play in Atlanta this year. You know, there are some reports that it may have a short porch, but I wouldn't be surprised to see him only deliver anywhere from like 7 to 10 home runs, and you know, maybe have 7 to 10 stolen bases and struggle with a, you know, an average. You know, I think he will be a better player later on in fantasy circles, but I think right now the industry is going insane because they see that 1-1 pick that he went for, the huge trade, and I'm completely out, and my rank kind of shows that.
If we were doing like a fantasy, you know, hotness league, though, the guy is a first-round pick. The guy is like grade A looks. His hair is top-notch. The face, the, you know, the jawline, all that is just really, it's kind of riveting, to be honest.
Vanderbilt education, if that counts for you.
Yeah, Vandy, you know, education. Also, I mean, the only person I might put him from, or people I would put him from maybe, is like Bryce Harper, Eric Hosmer, Matt Kemp in the eyes definitely have to be up there. But other than that, like, he's probably a top 5 pick.
Yeah, that's going to make up all the drops for the front of the episode right there. let's go ahead and move on. Talk about Orlando Arcia, who's a guy I think is kind of getting lost in the shuffle. Was kind of a hot name going into drafts last year. People were really excited to pick him up. Matt, what are your thoughts on Orlando Arcia for this year?
He's a really hard player to gauge. The floor is non-existent, meaning he could be just flat out terrible, because in the minor leagues he really hasn't put up numbers that get you excited. He's been extremely young for every level he's been at, which has been the caveat. Keeps you coming back and looking at it. But I mean, he was in the PCL last year and he didn't leave a lot to be desired on the offensive end. He's a stud defender, so he's gonna play, but like 267, 320, 403 with 19 doubles, 6 triples, 8 homers, and 400 at-bats, and as a 22-year-old in the PCL last year, that doesn't jump off the page by any standard. I mean, yeah, he's a really hard player to gauge and project on the outcome. I mean, I do think the ultimate ceiling is he's pretty much Dansby Swanson for me with more steals and less power, but he doesn't have the batting average floor that Swanson has. So I'm not investing anything in Arcia this year because I think the range of outcomes is drastically too wide for me. There's no safety, no comfort. Yes, you're getting him late, so there's a little bit of upside baked in, but I'm still going to pass. As Drupal Cabrera is going after him, I'd much rather have him, Zach Cozart. I'll invest in those guys, and I'll leave somebody else to get Arcia. He's like Swanson, like you said, he's going to be a better real life player than fantasy player. So I'll let someone else take the plunge there.
Vlad, what are your thoughts on Arcia for this year?
Well, I think had he come out swinging right out of the gate and had those better numbers sort of early on, he could potentially be going like 100 spots higher, because a lot of people just really, you know, you're looking at what have you done for me lately, and, you know, you look back at those numbers and just really unassuming. And I think because of that, you're looking at a guy with a, you know, 260 ADP compared to, you know, Dansby Swanson, who's got a little bit more excitement and hype around him, you know, going almost 80 picks. Higher, and I think a lot of times we're just, you know, remembering like that you know, the Correas and the Lindors of the world, and the masses, I think, instantly discredit rookies when they struggle upon promotion. But I think those struggles are basically, you know, just totally normal. So you know, Arcia bounced up and down the lineup all over the place last year. I think he's got some value if he's able to hit and stick in the number two spot in the lineup, but I think that remains to be seen. And you know, it's just sort of an afterthought this year. I don't mind him where he goes at his ADP. I think his value is going to be with the stolen bases. And like Matt said, really don't know where his average is going to fall. So don't really know about that floor.
Mike, where are you at on Arcia?
I like Arcia, but to be completely honest, he has the same upside as a player that we're about to talk about, but he's going approximately 60 picks. I don't know if I can do my math right here, but approximately 60 picks ahead of him. So while I think Arcia is, you know, he has over 2,000 plate appearances in the minor leagues, he's well seasoned at this point. I agree. Like, he didn't come out and, you know, set the earth on fire with his performance last year in 200 at bats, but I do think he can hit 10 home runs, and I definitely think he can steal 20 plus bags this year if things were to play right. And I think that he can hit for 270 plus batting average. The part that he plays in is awesome. The lineup around him is pretty solid too. You know, there is a lot to like with Arcia, but I'm willing to wait and grab. If I'm going down that far in the shortstop pool, then I'm willing to grab some guys that are a little bit later here. And I probably am going to have a guy earlier anyways, but I don't think there's anything wrong with Arcia for this year, because I think he has a pretty decent floor, because, you know, Milwaukee's not going to compete this year. They're going to give him every opportunity to get, you know, 400 or 500 at bats. And if he gets that many at bats, he's going to end up getting 20 plus stolen bases and probably 5 to 10 home runs with a 260, 270, maybe even higher batting average if things play right. So I don't think there's anything wrong with them, but I do think that there's some guys lower that I would rather go with.
I'm actually a little bit intrigued by Arcia, because one of the things he did show that he could do in the minor leagues was steal bases, and he plays on the team that steals just a ton. I mean, we mentioned earlier in the podcast, you know, they stole about 40, 45 more bases than the next highest team in baseball, in the Reds. They're just a team that's going to push it on the base paths. He's going to play because he's got good defense. They're a team that's not competing. So I think this is a guy that could be like a sneaky 25 to 30 stolen base kind of guy. And that, to me, considering where he's going and considering the climate of fantasy baseball where steals are at a premium, is actually going for a pretty nice price. So, I mean, you know, if he doesn't succeed, if he only steals, you know, if he only hits, you know, 7-8 home runs and, you know, steals 15 bags, it's not like you've lost out a whole bunch by taking him, you know, where he's going, which is about 260th overall right now. So I'm actually okay with it. If for some reason, you know, one of my strategies has been so far this year, kind of wait on shortstop if I don't get one of the elite guys I really love. And so I'm like targeting a Marcus Semien or a Brandon Crawford. But if for some reason I miss out on them because of a run, you know, I'm okay with Arcia at shortstop. I think he does have some sneaky upside. You're going to have to plan for a crappy average, because I don't think he's going to hit for a real nice average this year. But, I mean, at that point in the draft, you're planning for some sort of war anyways. So
scares me. The lack of walks for someone as young as him, that kind of, he's getting, I mean, there's no reason for the Brewers to even really call him up last year, and it was kind of weird that they did. He definitely has, like I said, he's never posted really sharp offensive numbers across any levels. His best season was in Double A, which, okay, Double A season was nice, but I mean, he's a better real life player defensively, but they had VR last year playing shortstop. Yes, he's not great at defensively, but the Brewers had no reason to start the clock last year, no reason to bring up Arcia, and it was really strange that they did. I don't understand the intrigue for fantasy for me. Yes, he had eight steals. Yes, the Brewers run a lot, but I just think he's such a risky proposition. Even going forward, even in dynasty formats, he's such a risky proposition because I think he's like a J.P. Crawford, and that's not a very exciting player for me.
Over under 17.5 stolen bases next season.
Over
over.
Over. Over.
Okay, over under 20.5 stolen bases next year.
Over.
I'll go over.
Yeah, he's going to get the playing time, so I guess over, but he's going to kill you everywhere else.
But, I mean, that has value, especially if you buy into the fact that, yeah, you know, power is up compared to stolen bases. I mean, and like you said, you're not paying for it. Yeah, he may hit 230 or two, you know, next year. But, I mean, Marcus Semien's probably going to hit 240.
Yeah, but he's going to hit 30 home runs up or close to it.
You're getting him, what, 30 picks later, 40 picks later? I mean, this is something you're planning for. It's an upside play that late in the draft. It's not it's not someone you're making a cornerstone of your team.
I will say the Pecota projections for Arcia have 241 or 248 average, 15 homers and 16 steals for this year.
That's crazy. The 15 homers.
I don't agree with that at all, but I mean that's what they have. They also have a 288 OBP, so if you're an OBP,
That 15 home runs would be the absolute ceiling.
High side.
I think that's really low on the stolen bases.
The stolen bases, yeah.
I'm not even sure he hits 15 home runs the next two seasons combined.
Oh, that you're being outrageous. Come on now.
I think he, like, if I was going to project him right now, I'd project him for 8 home runs and 25 stolen bases at like a 240, 245 clip.
In that park, anybody can poke 10 out of there.
How many did Scooter Jeanette hit last year?
Who cares?
Exactly. All right, let's move on. Talk about Alcides Escobar. Mike, I was pretty sure you were referencing him as a guy that you would just wait on and take over Arcia. Tell me why.
Yes, while you guys were just blabbing about Orlando Arcia, not giving any more info, just random takes about things, I'm sitting here like, let's talk about Escobar because he's the absolute forgotten man here. Nobody is drafting him. He's outside the top 300. And to me, he's going to end up leading off for the Kansas City Royals, a team that has stolen in the top 7 in attempts per game over the last 2 years. They just lost Dyson, which means that they're going to need a table setter and somebody to steal more bases. I think that he's going to steal 25-plus bags, and you're getting him for absolutely nothing. I know that he's not a batting average guy. No, he's not going to hit for much power at all. But sitting at the top of that lineup, I think he can score 65, 70, maybe even 80 runs possibly. And, again, steal 25, maybe on the high side of things, 30, 35 bases, which would be absolutely wonderful. Again, he's absolutely free. With everybody bitching about how low stolen bases are nowadays, this is a prime example of a guy that nobody's talking about that can give you value for your team that you pay absolutely nothing for. I'm all in on Alcides Escobar, and I need to rinse my mouth out with soap just talking about it.
Vlad, what are your thoughts on Escobar this year? Are you all in as well?
Not quite all in. I don't know. The good thing about it is they don't have a true leadoff guy, and there's really no one better suited than Escobar to lead off, and I think that's what he's projected to do. I know that last season he spent some time at the bottom of the lineup, which obviously hurt his run opportunities. The last 2 years, he's only had 17 stolen bases over each of the last two seasons, career walk rate of 4%. He's 30 years old already. He's getting up there in age. I'm not opposed to him potentially going back to, stealing some more bases. I don't think he'll have as low as 17, but I don't think he'll necessarily be 30 plus. So for me, just in general, I'm just not loving this Royals team this year. I think they're going to be a lot worse, actually, offensively without Kendrys Morales. And I think in that range, a guy that I'm sort of more interested in, who will steal some bags and give me a little extra and plays in a great ballpark, is a guy like Chris Owings on the Diamondbacks.
Matt, what is your thoughts on Alcides Escobar?
If I would much rather have him than Arcia. I'm sure you're shocked, but I think – Vlad nailed it. The Steelers, I think, are going to be not quite 31 like they were in 2014, but they're not going to be 17 like they were the last two seasons. Kansas City oddly likes him as a leadoff man, and I don't see any reason why they're going to change that with Ned Yost still there. I think 25 steals is a realistic outcome. I think that's realistic. It might be on the high end, but you look at Escobar, I think he's going to hit. He's going to be the same player he always is. Handful of home runs, some steals. Won't kill you in the batting average, but he will kill you in on base percentage formats. But when you're getting him as late as you are, you can bank those steals, and he's not going to hit bad enough to where he's not going to be a major leaguer, which is my fear with Arcia. So I'll take Escobar.
Yeah, the 4% walk rate, I mean, and that was his highest walk rate in four seasons, is a tad bit concerning to me. But Ned Yost don't give a shit. He's going to put anybody up there with a little bit of speed in that leadoff spot and call it a day. So I thoroughly expect him to be leading off the majority of the season. I agree with Mike. I think he is a really, really, really underappreciated, underrated kind of fantasy guy this season. Partially, you know, due to other options kind of emerging, partially to do with the fact that I think he's now in his 30s and people are kind of discounting him. But I think he probably will steal about 25 bases and lead off for the Royals, which means some decent stats at least in the first half. And then maybe you try to sell him the second half when they start selling all their pieces. So I like Alcides Escobar as a really, really cheap option. Currently going is the 21st shortstop off the board, 329th overall. That's criminally low. Let's move on to Johnny Peralta. And when we talk about decrepit, older Cardinals players, we always throw it to Matt.
Yeah, this is fair.
That's the perfect word, decrepit.
Yeah. Decrepit. I guess Peralta is one of the most boring players to own in fantasy. And he had a really tough year last year with the thumb injury and kind of led to the emergence of Aledmys Diaz. And Peralta, he's fully healthy this year. I hate spring training so much. I already tired of reading stories about this. Between Dexter Fowler quotes and what, in which he was right, by the way. But and then Johnny Peralta, with the thumb injury, telling everybody, oh, I wasn't 100% last year. I'm in the – guess what words he used, guys? You want to take a guess?
Is he in the best shape of his life?
No, he said he feels better than he did last year. But I set you up for that one. But, no, I mean, Peralta, what you're going to do, I think a season like 2015 is absolute peak of what you can expect. 17 home runs, 275 average. Not great at anything. Playing time is – that's if he gets playing time, because that's not a sure thing. I think they have to go Jerko at third base last year, depending on what he did. I got to remember Peralta's not really – he's a better third baseman than shortstop, but, I mean, he's not a defensive asset at any place at this point in his career. I just don't know – I would never have him in any of my teams this year. There's no upside. It's all downside for me, so pass.
Vlad, what are your thoughts on Johnny Peralta for this year?
I mean, I don't have many. I mean, he's turning 35 years old. Probably, you know, I'd say maybe get 30-40% of the time at third base. But the positive really is that he's essentially free in drafts. I mean, with a 450 average draft position, he's basically your last pick in a 15-teamer. So, you know, obviously he missed half the season last year with the thumb. But really, he's just really nothing more than a free agent guy that you might pick up if, you know, something happens to Jerko. The one thing is, if he does get those plate appearances and somehow does get you know, 500 or so, I think he can easily pop 15 to 20 home runs, and probably, you know, won't really hurt you across the board. But again, just a guy at the end of your drafts that you can pick up. Nothing special.
Mike, what are your thoughts on Peralta?
I do just want to say, going back to the last segment, that I do like Chris Owings a lot as well. So I think that's a great name, Vlad, that you mentioned. But to bring up not a great name, Johnny Peralta, I just, you know, he's way too old to really consider in fantasy. I will say this, you know, at the beginning of the year last season, he ended up having thumb surgery. I think it delayed him till, you know, July or so, maybe June. Looking at it now. Yeah, it was June. And, you know, it took him a couple months to really kind of get things going. But once August, you know, turned around, it ended up being, you know, 280 average in August, 293 in September. The power wasn't amazing, but he doesn't strike out a ton, which means the batting average should be solid, somewhere in the 270 range or plus. And in a very deep, maybe not very deep, but maybe 10 or 12 team NL only, I can see him being a viable utility third base shortstop type guy. I think he can, you'll probably get 15 to 20 or 30% of the time at shortstop if it's, you know, if somebody gets injured or whatever. And, you know, I think that he can probably get 300 plus at bats as well. So maybe double digit home runs, 270 average, 280 maybe in the bright side of things, and call it a day. But it's starting to hit that time for Peralta where we might not be seeing him play in the MLB that much longer.
I mean, I see what you guys are saying, and I agree with a lot of it. I think I would buy into a little bit more playing time than you guys. You know, he can play kind of all over the diamond in terms of his eligibility, which is nice if he can kind of pick up positional eligibility at different spots. They can move all those guys all around pretty much, except for Diaz. You know, Jerko is going to play shortstop, third base, second base. Wong could get moved into the outfield if injuries happen there. I mean, I think he's going to find playing time. So the idea that he's only going to get about 300 at-bats to me seems a little bit low. I think that he is kind of a sneaky guy going super late. I put him on my 2017 lottery ticket team because, like Vlad said, you don't have to pay shit for him at this point. He's going outside the top 450. You know, he does have, you know, power in the bat still. I mean, even with the thumb injuries, hit 8 home runs last year in only 300 plate appearances. So I think Peralta's a guy that, like, in your 50-team draft that holds, might as well just take a shot on him late and see if he can kind of produce. And, you know, throw a couple bucks at him in an NL only, see what happens. But I don't...
It is...
Go ahead, Matt.
It is worth noting that I guess what he did after the All-Star break, like Mike touched on, was nearly identical. I'm talking within 1 point of batting average, 10 points of OBP, and 8 points of slugging to what he did the entire 2015 season. So I think that's a good baseline. But, I mean, that's still not that exciting. But in a league, what you're talking about, it is. But
yeah, I mean, at this point, we're talking about a guy that isn't going to be drafted in 15-team leagues. You know, we're talking about this is NL only, or like I said, you know, the 50-round draft and hold in NFBC. I mean, this is a guy that is a reserve pick. But he has some upside, you know, and so the idea that he can't work his way into playing time. I mean, what happens if Jed Jerko returns back to being Jed Jerko, or Aledmys Diaz turns out not to be the guy that he showed himself to be last year? And it's not like Colton Wong has been a steady production guy throughout his career. You know, they have some older parts on that team. Guys could get injured. You know, I mean, it's not inconceivable that this guy could have, you know, 500 plate appearances next season and hit you, you know, 15 to 17 home runs. And I think there is value that late in the draft.
There's a small chance he adds first base eligibility too, but and you're not going to use him at first. But I mean, that can happen.
But I mean, a guy in a super deep league that has multi-position eligibility is awesome. I mean, that's one of the reasons why Jed Jerko is somewhat interesting to me this year, is because he's coming into the season with so many different positions under his belt.
Yeah, can't hurt.
All right, we're going to take another quick break. We'll be back right after this.
It's that time again. That's right, it's fantasy baseball season, and the Fantasy Black Book is back and better than ever. This is Joe Pizzapia, author of the 9-time best-selling Fantasy Black Book series, number one right now on Amazon, on iTunes, and for the first time ever, the Fantasy Baseball Black Book can be held in your hand. Yes, what a beautiful world we live in. Head over to Amazon and buy your hard copy as well today. Baseball is coming. Are you ready?
All right, let's go ahead and talk about, we got a question from a listener. I meant to do it at the beginning of the podcast, but unfortunately, I am an idiot and skipped over it. So we're going to do it at the end of the podcast. This is from Tom. He is in a 10-team head-to-head categories, with OBP instead of average and losses as an extra pitching category. He can keep 3 players at a last round cost. You know, they're added on as free agents, for 3 years max. He has Mookie Betts, it's the last year he can keep him. He has Carlos Correa, can keep him for 2 more years. Syndergaard, that he can keep for 2 more years. And Trey Turner, who can keep for 3 more years. He's currently thinking about keeping Betts, Turner, Syndergaard, letting Carlos Correa go. There is a 25 innings minimum pitch limit each week. So he's thinking about loading up on a few elite starters and then just going in for a bunch of relief pitchers and closers to kind of try to make up in the ratios and saves. Vlad, what are your thoughts on this? Should he keep or should he drop Correa and keep the other three, or do you have another plan?
No, I think the way he's looking at it right now makes the most sense to me. Obviously you're going to keep Mookie Betts, even though it's the last year you can keep him. Noah Syndergaard, obviously, even though they do count losses here, and that's probably going to lose a lot of games, but that's a whole different story. And really it comes down to Carlos Correa or Trey Turner. You're getting the extra year out of Trey. And, just looking at, straight ADP, obviously those guys are kind of close. Turner will go a little higher this year. But you're just going to get a lot more stolen bases. Got a great opportunity there at or near the top of the lineup to, who knows really what can happen there, what kind of season he can have, or even for the next, short term in his career. So I think for this one, it's pretty straightforward. It's hard to cut a guy like Correa. But when you have four wonderful options like this, kind of got to do it.
Matt, what are your thoughts on this? Who are you dropping?
It sounds weird, but I agree. It has to be Correa. Dropping Correa in a keeper dynasty format seems kind of strange, but I think it's the right play here. Betts and Syndergaard for me are no-brainers. Betts is one of the top four or five players in the game for me in fantasy, and Syndergaard's a top four or five pitcher. So you got to keep both of those guys. The Correa and Turner being an extra year of Turner, I think that makes the decision easier. I think Turner has the stolen base floor is going to be nice for Turner as well. It's crazy to me that you're somehow able to snag all four of these guys, so props to you, Tom. But I'll throw Correa back, and it's going to be awful painful. Is there a way you could trade him, to get more draft picks or something? I mean, obviously, if there is, you can explore that. But I mean, yeah, it seems awful weird, but you have to throw Correa back.
Mike, are you in agreement?
No, I'm not. And I actually think if you can trade, that's by far the best strategy here, is to try and trade at least one of these assets to try and, at least for a draft pick or whatever. But I'm dropping Syndergaard. It's a 10-team league. And, if your strategy already is to get a bunch of elite closers so that you're essentially punting, losses and whatever, I think that the best strategy is to keep the three elite hitters. And then, in a 10-team league and everybody's keeping three, that leaves 30 players out of the draft pool. You can get yourself an ace that's going to be very comparable to Noah Syndergaard. In my opinion, you're not going to get a guy that's very comparable to Carlos Correa or Trey Turner after you end up keeping Syndergaard, in my opinion. So as straightforward as it is to drop Correa in this instance, and I understand the reason why, if it's my team, I'm dropping Syndergaard because I can grab other aces if I wanted to go that route and then build up my elite pitchers, my relief pitchers as the draft goes on as well. For me, I'm dropping Syndergaard.
Yeah, this is a really tough one because there's part of me that really agrees with Mike, and there's part of me that agrees with Vlad and Matt. If you're trying to decide between Correa and Turner, you go Turner because of the format. And I know I've been critical of where Turner is going, and I have Correa ranked above Turner in terms of my overall ranks. The format, the head-to-head categories, Turner's the kind of guy that can win you a week in stolen bases.
And the extra year.
Yeah, and the extra year. So, I mean, if you're going to go between those two because they're middle infielders and you would like to keep Syndergaard, I would go Turner over Correa and keep Betts and Syndergaard. However, I think the better strategy is what Mike is saying. Keep the three hitters. I mean, in a 10-team league, pitching is just so deep. Syndergaard is electric as he is and as high upside as he is, there's a lot of reasons to be concerned, especially in terms of long term. And so if you're thinking about a guy that you can keep for another 2 years, I have no concerns that 3 years from now or 2 years from now that the three hitters are going to be top 30 players. I do have concerns that Syndergaard will be around, at least, and not getting a Tommy John or something like that sometime in the next 2 to 3 years. So for that reason, I think I'm with Mike. I'm going with three hitters.
Great question, though. It's a really tough thing to solve because all four of them are elite players,
Yeah. Thank you, Tom, for sending in the question. If you have questions for the podcast, we will do our best to answer them. If for some reason we don't answer it live on the air, I'll make sure that one of us, more than likely me, answers it via email. But send it to friendsoffantasybenefits@gmail.com. We're happy to answer listener questions. I think the Tuesday podcast is going to answer another one. So definitely send those in because they add kind of an extra layer to the show, and we want to be interactive with you guys. So definitely hit us up, friendswithfantasybenefits@gmail.com. That is going to wrap us up for this episode. Vlad, thank you for joining us.
Thanks, guys, so much. Really appreciate it, and looking forward to talking to you some more this year.
Definitely.
Yeah, thanks, Vlad.
Mike and I will get to meet you at Tout Wars this year, so we're looking forward to seeing you there. But before we close out, give yourself some plugs and remind people again where they can reach you on social media.
I'm on Twitter, RotoGut, and I'll be writing this year primarily over on RotoWire.
Awesome. Mike, where can people reach you? What are you working on?
Reach me on Twitter, at Mike Werner, FWFB. I am finishing up my ranks for Fantasy Pros. Really long process for them, but I'm getting that done. I'm also revising my ranks for the website. I'm also working on a piece for the website as well. It's kind of my guys with my own stamp of approval on them, so that'll be coming out fairly soon. I'm going to be writing for Baseball HQ this year, my daily matchups column, as usual, and the Prospect Podcast or every Thursday with Matt and Andy Anderson and myself. It's been getting a lot of really good feedback, and I think we're doing a really good job on there, so tune into all that stuff.
Yeah, the Prospect Pod that you, Matt, and Andy are doing has become my new favorite podcast.
Oh, thanks.
I'm really enjoying it. You guys are giving a lot of great information. It's super entertaining. I like the dichotomy between the three of you. So definitely check that out if you haven't been listening. Even if you're not in Dynasty Leagues or Keeper formats, I think it's a really nice addition to our weekly set of podcasts. Matt, what are you doing and where can people reach you?
Again, like you said, Prospect Pod comes out Thursday with me, Mike, and our newbie Andreas, or Andy, whatever he wants to go by. He's got multiple personalities, so maybe he'll be somebody different this week. I dropped the top 200 Dynasty prospects last week on Friday, so you might have missed it. We'll retweet that for you to scoop that up. A lot of work put into that. All the prospect reviews and all the podcasts were done. Justin, good job on those. We all did fantastic stuff with Friends with Fantasy Benefits all year round. Shortstops are the to follow along with the theme. We'll be talking shortstops on the Prospect Pod, so go check that out this week, like I said. And yeah, follow me on Twitter, MDTompFWFB, and we'll answer some questions for you.
And then you can reach me on Twitter at Justin Mason, FWFB. Email me or the show, friendsfantasybenefits@gmail.com. Please give us a 5-star review. Really, really helps us out. And if you do, we'll make sure you get entered into one of our listener leagues or eligible for other prizes. Listener League 1 is filled, absolutely filled to the brim. It's going to start drafting. It's slow draft here in the next day or two. And so we are already getting ready to start filling up Listener League number 2. Hopefully we get enough people in for that, but we're also going to start doing some giveaways. I'm going to start giving out some free t-shirts, maybe some free hats. I've got some stuff from our good buddy, Arbar Tard, from the Rec Room in San Francisco, who gave me a bunch of stuff, so I'm going to start kind of passing that out. Got to figure out exactly how we're going to do those, but it'll revolve around 5-star reviews, so... if you can do that for us, it really, really helps us out. Like we mentioned last week, we are now the highest rated explicit fantasy baseball podcast out there and in the top 10 overall on iTunes. So really appreciate everybody for helping us out with reviews and listening and downloading and subscribing, because it's really starting to come together for us. So you can read all my baseball stuff either on friendsoffantasybenefits.com or on FanGraphs. And my ranks are on FanGraphs, friendsoffantasybenefits.com, and Fantasy Pros. So definitely check it out on all three locations. You know, gives me extra clicks. So that is going to wrap us up for this episode. For Mike, Matt, Vlad, and myself, thank you for listening. Have a fantastic baseball season.